This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, with New York's only local news talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
All right, Bill Rock, thank you very much, and a good morning to you all. 10 minutes after 8 o'clock, it is Friday, and the mayor is here. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning. Wales is the story for rain, John, not New York.
Well, this morning, Mr. Mayor, we got flooding everywhere.
We do, but there's so much flooding in Wales, they had to cancel the Ryder Cup, which for Tiger Woods is a bigger deal than the fact that we've got some subways that are
working. for Tiger and the rest of the U.S. team, you're absolutely right. We'll see whether or not they can get that all squeezed in before the weekend.
One of the things we talked about this week was infrastructure that keeps water when you have a storm from overwhelming the sewage system, and today's a good example of why we need it.
Absolutely. Now, I have been talking about this for better than 20 years, and you and I have been doing it on and off for the nine that we've been together here, that the sewage systems in our area, because we are an older infrastructure, just were never designed for the amount of volume that they have to handle, and we need to start changing these things out, which I know New York and other communities have started to do.
Right. Well, everybody else has been waiting for federal aid. What we've been doing is doing it with our own money, but it is a project that will take decades to do. The original design was that what's in the, goes down the sewers in the street gets mixed in with what comes out of your toilets and sinks in your house, and normally that water goes to a waste treatment plant. It's cleaned up, and then clean water is dumped back into the rivers and harbor, and the cycle continues. The trouble is that when you have an enormous storm all at the same time, the water that runs off the streets overwhelms the system, and the backup, of course, is you got to do something with it. So the mixture of what comes out of your house and off the streets bypasses, to some extent, the sewage treatment system and goes straight into the rivers and the bay, and that's not good for anybody. In the summer, every once in a while, we have to close beaches because the bacteria count is too high until nature takes over and cleans it all up. We have orders from the federal government to clean up. We get fined by the federal government under the circumstances, certain circumstances when the water overflows. But we're investing as fast and building as fast as we can. And I suppose there'll always be some level if you got a certain amount of rain in a big, in a very short period of time that you couldn't handle. But the real solution is to keep the water from ever getting to the sewage system. And that's why things like a green roof, for example, where you have soil and a lot of gravel in it on the roof, and plants that don't need a lot of maintenance, like cactus and, you know, deserty kind of plants that don't grow a lot, but they keep it green, and when the rain comes, it goes into the ground and it stays there and slowly gets evaporated back out into the air. Or some other kind of infrastructure, blue infrastructure, where we basically take the water and store it a little bit right on site and slowly let it leak out into the streets and go into the sewer system, and then the sewer system can handle it.
All right, so you're not planning, nor are you building, as I understand your explanation, a separate street water system.
No, that would be just a massive project. You'd have to dig up every single street in the city, big plants on the river. We just couldn't do that. But this will solve the problem. It's just going to take us a while to get there. Having said that, the green and blue infrastructure reduces the demand and makes the problem more solvable and more affordable.
All right, kind of interesting, as they say, it's a problem.
Yeah, and just to confuse everything, there's gray infrastructure, too. That's where you take the water and you store it in these enormous tanks and then slowly put it back into the system. But those things cost a fortune, and we've got a plan over the next X number of years that will actually save $2 or $3 billion. Now, keep in mind, this is government speak, so savings means spending less in this case, not actually spending less.
Well, let me tell you, the system this morning is being strained because there's upwards of 3 inches of rain in a very short, maybe 3-hour period this
morning. Right, and while we very much need the rain in the area, it's been very dry in the regional area over the summer. This much rain this quickly only helps a little bit because so much of it runs off rather than gets absorbed. The ground just can't absorb it that fast.
All right, you were pretty popular on television this week. Saw you on the Today Show talking education. I saw Letterman had you on the other night.
You know, he's been on the air for 28 years. I said to him, it was like 28 years before he invited me, and he said, no, you were here before, which is true. But what I did is a few years ago, and you'll never believe this, but I went on the show to give him the key to the city. At least that's what he thought. Except that in those days, if you remember, he went through a brief period with a beard.
Yes.
And I gave the key to the beard, not him. And that was it. And then I walked off. And then yesterday, or the other day when I was on the show, I asked for the key back. He said he'd send it, the beard would send it back, but so far we've been unable to locate the beard.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's been unable to locate the key.
Oh, yeah, oh, I was putting aside, I was talking to him. He has been on television for 28 years, and you know, you've been on for, how many years have you been on radio?
35.
There are businesses like radio and television and music, and a lot of these businesses are businesses where everybody's a flash in the pan, you taste change so quickly, nobody can survive, and yet there's some people who survive for very, very long times. Mick Jagger is, you know, 50-plus years. Diana Ross was top of the game for 40-plus years, and I think still sings. John Gambling. Think about that. Well, who would have thought you, when you started out, you'd last this long?
Nobody.
I'm sure your father and grandfather didn't either.
Nobody. Okay. Fortunately, we've been able to fool them all of these years. Let's see here. Let's talk about you were in Washington. You know what, Mr. Mayor? Let me take a break here. I just looked at the clock. Let me take our first break here, and when we come back, we'll get into what you were in Washington yesterday about. Mayor Michael Bloomberg with you, and of course, 821. Again, the telephone lines are open for your questions to ask the mayor before we finish. 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, not in a new conversation for you or me or for, I think, too many people in Washington. It maybe is a rare conversation. You were in Washington with Rupert Murdoch and others before a House committee talking about immigration once again.
Immigration is one of the big things facing this country, John. If we want to get ourselves out of the economic problems we have where people can't find jobs, we need more immigrants and not less. Now, most people say, oh, immigrants take jobs. Yeah, a handful do, but most actually either take jobs nobody else will do and then let those businesses survive, and in the end, they create jobs for Americans who've been here for many generations, but they also come and they start businesses. And we need people who are entrepreneurs. We need the scientists who are going to create the next products that the companies will be built around that will employ our people. And every other country is out there trying to get the best and the brightest, and we're trying to keep them out of our country.
You have made the point that we have all the laws that are necessary here. We need to do some things like border security and some identification issues like that. But this seems to me to be a very easy thing that is really just a bureaucratic situation. It's a political decision on who we want and who we don't want, and
I don't think it's bureaucratic. I think you're right. It's political. I mean, I watched yesterday, Republicans, Democrats, both smart, understand the issues, but they only take some of the issues. And I kept saying, if you want to solve the problem, you have to do everything at once. Why? Because if you do only one of the three things, and I'll tell you what they are in a second, the other two don't work. And number two, you can't build a political constituency to vote a law unless you take care of, if everybody gets something, then you have a chance of pulling things together. And if you think about it, that's what democracy is all about. It's really everybody getting something, nobody getting everything, and nobody getting nothing. And you've got to find some ways to craft that. Now, you know, that's the president's job to pull them together, but it's the Republicans and Democrats in the Senate and the House who have to be receptive and have to work together with the president to get this done. And this is something that, you know, every state needs, every city needs, every American citizen needs. And if we don't do it, we're going to be in very big trouble. There's one country that's paying our scientists to come and live there. you know, we're in a competition in the real world. And the whole immigration thing is really built around three things. One, it's getting border security, because we should decide who comes into this country and not let anybody make the decision on their own. They can make a decision whether they want to come, but we've got to decide whether we want to take them in. We have to get the people who we need from around the world, convince them to come here so that they'll do their inventions and create their businesses here. And third, we have to do something about the 11 million or thereabouts, that's an estimate, but it's something like that, undocumented. And the trouble is that we've addressed each of these things in a half way, maybe, but and never at the same time. So border security, for example, we send police, troops, whatever, to the border. The trouble is that as long as American companies break the law and hire undocumented illegals, there will be too many people trying to come across the border for all the police that we have to ever stop. So if you want to have border security, it's got to be two sides. Put your troops on the border or police on the border, and at the same time, make sure you enforce the law that companies don't hire undocumented. The trouble is, undocumented, the only ways a company can tell is with a Social Security card. Well, you can buy a fake Social Security card for $50 on the street. So you have to have a new Social Security card with biometrics, fingerprints, or something like that in it that can't be faked. And then you would get control of your borders all at once. The trouble is that we need a lot of those undocumented to run a lot of businesses in our country. Agriculture just doesn't survive without it. And we, you know, people aren't willing to admit that, but that's the truth. We're not going to get Americans to go and pick apples, but people from overseas or other countries are willing to do those kinds of jobs, and we need apples. Then you got to do something about attracting people here, and that's giving visas. We only give 6% of our visas for people that we need to build our economy. Canada gives 36% of their visas to build their economy. And the third part is we have this 11 million people who are here. Yes, they broke the law, but keep in mind, we wanted them to break the law. Congress did, back in 1986, what it always does. It passes a law, so in a ways, though, that it can't be enforced. So both sides can say to their constituents, oh, see, I passed the law, or oh, see, I kept the law from hurting. And what happened was the undocumented came into the country against the law, but we made sure that nobody could stop them. And so they're here. And at this point, we cannot deport them. I don't know what people are thinking about. If you would have a court case that would go on longer than anybody who's alive today. You would. We have undocumented with an enormous number that have children who are born here who are citizens who are not going to change the Constitution. They are citizens. You just can't leave, you know, a million kids without parents. We need the work. And undocumented pay taxes. That's the little secret here. They pay taxes and they pay Social Security, and they don't get any of the benefits because their documentation is flawed. There's no place to send them a refund or send them a Social Security benefit check. In fact, I love this. The actuary at the Social Security Administration estimates that Social Security will go bankrupt 6 years earlier than it's scheduled to if the undocumented weren't here, because they pay in a lot of money but don't get any benefits.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Do you give any validity to the thought that there are some that leave our immigration system the way it is because they are looking for illegal votes?
Well, the undocumented don't vote.
Well, that's what I always thought, but I mean, I hear this all the time.
Just people talking, not knowing. Undocumented don't vote. In fact, immigrants, one of the problems is those that have become citizens. Well, you don't vote generally, certainly not in the national election and not in New York City. You don't vote even if you're a documented immigrant. You have to be a citizen to vote. That's the difference between being here legally and being a citizen. It's voting. It's the ultimate franchise. It's why our soldiers go overseas and give their lives so that we can be in charge of our own destiny. We don't give that away, and we shouldn't give it away. And I'm not suggesting for a second we should make it easy to become a citizen in the United States. We should decide who comes into this country. We should go out and actively advertise and try to convince the people that we need to build our economy to come into this country. that we've got to do something with 11 million. You cannot deport them. It would cost trillions of dollars. It would never get done. It would disrupt so many businesses. But you don't want the problem to get worse. That's why you've got to get control of the borders now. But you'll only build a political constituency for that if you address the other two legs of the problem.
Did you get any sense when you appeared in Washington yesterday that there was any movement along
the way? Well, look, I mean, number one, there's something called an election coming up. You've probably heard about that.
Yeah, I heard a rumor, yeah.
Right. There is nothing that's going to happen between now and November 2nd, okay? As a matter of fact, Congress has gone, the Senate's already gone home, and the House, I don't know, I think they recessed too. So everything's closed down until at least November 3rd. Then, will they come together? They'll come together if the public calls up and says, I'm tired of this partisanship and this gridlock, I'm not going to take it anymore. And in fact, the wake-up call, John, is called the Tea Party. That's what the Tea Party is. It's funny, it's not a political movement. They're not pro-choice or pro-life. They're not pro-gun or anti-gun. They're not pro-gay rights or anti-gay rights. They're not any of the social issues. They are a group of people, and you see this every 8-10 years. There was a Perot boomlet, if you remember, and then there's there was a McCain boomlet, 10 years ago. I'm sick of it. That's what people say. I don't know what the answer is. Your job is to figure it out, Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, Ms. President, whatever it is. But I'm just telling you, I'm annoyed. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to take this anymore. And so they cast out. And in many cases, they're casting out may be irrational in terms of the direction they go. But there is the argument that they've listened to both Republicans and Democrats again and again saying, if you elect me, I'll fix it. And regardless of which one gets into office, and we've had Republican presidents and Democratic presidents, we've had Republicans controlling the House and the Senate and Democrats controlling the House and the Senate, and these people who are disaffected, they would say nothing's changed. Now, there are others that say we made a lot of progress, and there's some truth on both sides of the aisle. But there is this massive countrywide frustration is a good word, and if that takes place, then maybe it will force the Republicans and Democrats to come to the table and come together. I can tell you in testifying yesterday, on both sides of that big desk in front of us, they sit way up there, and the witnesses
sit
way down.
Yes, looked down upon you.
Yeah, I mean, it's the ultimate power trip. It's always annoying. they've got to remember they work for us, and it doesn't ever.
You mean maybe the tiering should be different?
If you changed it around, it would send the right message. I mean, I've always thought that a lot of these things, we forget who works for whom, and we provide things. There used to be, I love this, at National Airport, now named Reagan Airport, there used to be, as you pulled into the main terminal, a sign. It was a good-sized sign, and it said, right there, parking was always terrible at National. I had to park way, way away and walk forever. But there was this parking lot right next to the main terminal with a big sign, reserved for members of Congress and Supreme Court justices only. And I thought to myself every time I saw it, boy, these people really aren't all that attuned to dealing with people, would be a nice way to phrase it. They're telling everybody, it's bad enough they take the best parking for themselves, but then to throw it in the face of the public who wants
to. Customer service seems to have disappeared.
The private sector could never survive that way, John. It just could not. Anyways, they finally got rid of the sign. I think they got rid of the parking lot. In any case, there's new terminals, and it wouldn't make any difference anymore. But that's what you see in this country. And your question is, will they do something about immigration? Normally, in this country, we need a crisis in this day and age. This is the trouble with something like this, or our public schools, which is just as big a crisis. It's hard to say one day, if we don't do something by Tuesday, you know, and in fact, maybe we did do, you saw that, when we had to change the number of charters in the state that were permitted before a given day to apply for
Race to the Top.
Then they did it.
That's
but the trouble
need.
With immigration and generally in education, you know, there's no one drop dead date, so there's always, well, next election cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, Mr. Mayor, put your feet up. We'll grab your cup of coffee. We'll be back in a sec. Try with your question, 800-321-0710. Mr. Mayor, I understand that the police department, NYPD, is not going to get any federal money for hiring.
You know, it's really hard to explain. The Justice Department awarded $300 million this year from a program to cities across the country to hire police officers. And you know how much we got?
How much?
Zip.
Maybe you do too. Maybe we do too good a job with what we have. Is that the
thing? You know, that's in fact, that is what they say. We go, we tax ourselves, we hire the cops, they keep the streets safe, and then the government, federal government says, oh, well, you don't need it because you've got plenty of cops and safe streets. Now, think about what the other cities are doing. They don't hire cops until the federal government comes through with money. So in the meantime, their citizens are at risk. And if you think about it, last year's stimulus package had funding for this program, and the NYPD got zero from that round of what they call COPS grants, C-O-P-S. And the NYPD actually hasn't been granted COPS funding since the year 2005, when we received $6.3 million for 50 school safety officers.
Well, obviously, you've got to go and be more proactive and let the place fall apart.
That would be a solution to not one that we want to adopt.
No, of course not.
You know, if you think about it, New York City is the target for terrorists. We dedicate nearly 1,000 officers every day to counterterrorism. No other city in the country has to do that. And somehow we get no support to hire officers through this program. And every time someone is related to terrorism is caught overseas, they have a map of another city or another state. They've got a map of New York. And so the threat is here. It couldn't be clearer. You know, we didn't learn our lesson after the 1993 World Trade Center attack. Here we are 9 years after 9/11, and maybe we still haven't completely learned the lesson. It's really just beyond comprehension. With 35,000 uniform officers, we have 4.5, you count pensions, over $6 billion in cost, our budget for police. Crime is down again this year. It's down 35% since 2001. And Washington says, sorry, we're giving the money elsewhere.
All right, Mr. Mayor, the Department of Homeless Services being questioned about a test program called Home Base and using some control groups versus others about getting services and not. Some have called it callous. Your reaction?
Well, in the end, we are only going to spend money on things that work. So we have to find out what works. This is really all about people who say, never cut anything, just keep taxing and drive people out of the city. But in the meantime, you know, the few people that vote for me are going to be happy. And it is an outrage. We have to find out which things that work. The ways you do that is you look at one group that get a program, one group that doesn't get that same benefit. If the benefit works, then you give it to everybody. If the benefit doesn't work, you give it to nobody. Plain and simple. And it's fascinating. The same papers that write these stories and the editorial pages scream, stop wasting money, let's only do those things that work. Well, how are you going to tell?
Okay, the city council members are also, you know, pointing fingers.
Well, that's just, that's politics. But, you know, keep in mind, they don't run for re-election for another 1,180 odd days, so there's plenty of time for them to try to get headlines.
What's your position on mandatory sick time for businesses?
From a worker's point of view, I suppose it's great. From an employer's point of view, it's another expense. All of these things, they're nice to have, but if it's a federal program like the minimum wage, it's one thing, because every state, every city, no matter where your business is, you have to pay at least the minimum wage, and so nobody is disadvantaged compared to another. There's a little bit of disadvantage, I suppose, compared to the rest of the world, but it's hard to move your business overseas unless it's so burdensome. Generally, you would not do that. The trouble is that if we have a law for New York City that gives a benefit, forget about the merit of the benefit, the companies will move, or companies just will not hire. And I saw in the paper the other day, McDonald's wants to cancel one of their health care plans for their people because the new health care bill at a federal level would penalize them too much. Lots of small businesses, the health care, federal health health care bill. If you're over 19 employees, it's different than if you're at 19 or less. So people are saying, I'm just not going to hire the 20th employee. We've got to create jobs. And New York City has created, John, this year, 10% of all of the private sector jobs in this country. Just think about that. Everybody's complaining about and wringing their hands about unemployment. New York is doing something. Our Department of Small Business Services has placed 25,000 people this year so far on the ways to a record. You know, our HRA, Human Resources, we have a program to get people jobs, and the companies that find jobs for them only get paid if they stay in the job for a long period of time, so they're real jobs. Are they jobs with paying as much as the people would like, with benefits as much people would like? No, but they are jobs. They're jobs that we can create at the moment. And anything that hurts job creation, that makes it less attractive for businesses to hire people, is just not smart in this day and age. We just have to focus. You can't do everything. And the number one thing is to give people the dignity of being self-sufficient, employed, having a job. And so these benefits are nice, and I understand why people want them, but if you really want to help people, this is not the time to add costs to those people and those companies that are creating jobs.
Certainly was pleased to see, and this is not a new position for you or for me, about the tenure situation in New York City public schools. Do you believe that the new guidelines that you and Joel Klein are suggesting will change the status of many teachers? What's the expectation?
I don't think it'll change many, but it will change some, and the some are the ones that need the change. We have 80,000 teachers. To say that they aren't great is ridiculous. Just take a look at the results. Compared to the rest of the state, our graduation rate's up 27% in the last 5 years, the rest of the state 3%, math, English scores up, minorities who tested poorly, the gap's been closing. So on balance, the 80,000 teachers do a spectacular job, as does their management, called principals and assistant principals, and the school safety officers and parent coordinators and custodians. Everybody's doing a great job, but the bottom X percent is not doing a great job, and we have to either work with them and try to train them so they can do a better job, or replace them. But in any case, the one thing you cannot do is leave a teacher who can't teach at the front of a classroom. That is condemning our children to a lifetime of poverty. And if kids don't get an education in the public schools when they're young, they never come back. Almost never. It's just very hard to ever re-engage them and get them the skill sets and the understanding of how you work collaboratively and collectively that they're going to need. And so we're playing with these kids' lives, and instead people bring up the things, oh, well, you know, I mean, the teacher worked hard for 2 years and deserves it. The teacher may have worked hard for 2 years, and I'm sympathetic, and thank you very much for working hard. But the bottom line is, if you can't teach, you shouldn't be in front of the classroom. We'll try to help you to become able to teach, but in the end, if you can't do it, we're not going to give you permanent employment. And tenure, John, was a concept that came in the Joe McCarthy era, back in the 50s. If you remember, they went after a lot of college professors. Are you now, or have you ever been a communist? And they ruined a lot of careers. And so they came up with this idea of tenure for college professors so they could still write controversial things and not worry about their job. And somehow or other, that got changed to permanent jobs for public school teachers who don't say controversial things. They're trying to teach reading and writing, and they have protection anyways. They have civil service protection, so that you can't just be fired at will. We have to have cause if you're going to be dismissed, but There's no reason you have to have guaranteed employment for life.
Well, it's certainly about time that we're recognizing this, and others are recognizing it as well. I can recognize too, Mr. Mayor, that I've got a bunch of folks that want to ask you questions. We'll get to them in just a minute. Hi, Mr. Mayor, a couple of minutes left here. Let's open up the telephones, and we'll start with Bill. Bill, good morning. Your question for the mayor.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
Question is this. Where are we going to get the next generation of carpenters, electricians, plumbers, and bricklayers and such? What are we doing to expand and promote trade schools in our cities so these don't become jobs that Americans don't qualify for in the future.
You know, it's funny. There was a period not that many years ago when everybody said, well, you shouldn't have trade schools because you're saying my kid's not ready for college, doesn't have the ability to go to college. And the truth of the matter is, you know, a plumber today can probably make more money than if you go to college for 4 years, or even if you get a master's in many occupations. There are great jobs that you could go to directly out of school, but you do have to read and write. You do have to know math. You do have to understand how to work together. The basic skills, even for the jobs that people don't need college for, are more important than ever before. And you don't need to learn about how to be a computer scientist. What you'd have to do is know how to frame a question and work collaboratively. And we've got rid of a lot of our trade schools saying, oh, you know, you're condemning a kid to a life without college, not realizing that college isn't for everybody. We should set the highest standards and make sure that those who want to go to college have the skills to do that, and those that want to go into industry directly or to public service directly or whatever have the skills they need. But we should have what you'd call a trade school. And in fact, we've started to have a lot of those. We've created a number in the city. They are very popular. They're very hard to get into. It's very competitive. And the kids that are getting out of there are, I think, going to have great careers as we go forward. They're going to have to work for a living, just like those who go to college. There's no free lunch here. But this city should be training people for all different aspirations and people that have all different sets of skills. So I'm 100% with you, and I think we've turned the cycle from saying, oh, trade schools are bad, to trade schools are a necessary and important part of the educational spectrum, and the city should be providing it for the broad range of skills and desires in the city.
All right, Bill, thanks for the question. Let's move along to Ellen. Ellen, your question for the mayor.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have an idea on how the city can save money.
Why not use
firemen and policemen who retire early on disability to staff the 911 call center? These experienced fire and policemen would be wonderful in this role, and they can continue to serve the city even while out on disability.
There you go.
Well, here's the problem. Number one, it's a great idea, but the union contracts, and it's been tradition since the Lindsay days, I think, police and fire can retire, let's say, after 20 years with a full pension if the doctors say they have an injury that was caused by the work, or if the state legislature had voted that we just presume that any injuries they have were caused by work, they get retirement benefits that are much better. Disability benefits are not only much greater than regular benefits, they are not taxed by the federal, state, or city government. So if you think about that, to go out on a disability pension, you get an awful lot more for the rest of your life than if you just go out on a regular pension. But regardless, once they retire, there's an awful lot of pressure saying people shouldn't, what they call, double dip. They shouldn't be getting a pension and go to work for the city. So we can't have it both ways. I've never thought the double dipping argument made a lot of sense, because why is the city better off if somebody takes their pension and goes to work in the private sector? You either have pensions that don't pay if you work, which is probably not politically doable, and I'm not sure it's desirable either, but regardless, if somebody is going to take a pension and then go to work, and if there's somebody we trust and knows the city and is competent and hardworking, you're right, they should be working for the city. One of the other problems you'd, of course, have is the people that take the 911 jobs, 311 jobs, those kinds of jobs, they want their jobs, and they don't want to give it up to somebody else. So finding ways, both the police and fire department do try to keep people who have injuries or infirmities working in their departments and finding jobs that they can do, because these people are dedicated and want to keep working and want to, you know, keep the city going ahead.
All right, Mr. Mayor, you can hear the music in the background. Our time, unfortunately, is up. Have yourself a good weekend and week, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
Looking forward to it, John. And stay dry. Rain will be gone by the afternoon.
Hey, you got that right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.